Hotel check-in.
Staying up for days in the Chelsea Hotel, writing sad-eyed lady of the lowlands for you.
Yes, that's Bob Dylan name-checking Our Hotel and his song Sarah from his 1976 album Desire. We couldn't do a series on hotels and not talk about one of the most legendary of them all, the Chelsea Hotel in New York City. As we've already heard, songs have been written about it. Lou Reed, Joni Mitchell, Jefferson Airplane all mention it in their musical dispatches. Famous and not so famous people have lived and died there. Fights have broken out, scandals have erupted, and many a party has raged in its 250 rooms on 23rd Street in Chelsea. Artists, writers, singer-songwriters, punk musicians have all made the hotel home, from Bob Dylan to Leonard Cohen, Sid Vicious, Joey Ramone, even Australia's Brett and Wendy Whiteley, among countless others. We'll hear some of their stories a bit later. Despite it all, the Chelsea Hotel still stands and retains, hopefully, some of its bohemian charm. Well, joining us tonight for this hotel check-in is author Cheryl Tippins, who's written of Inside the Dream Palace, the life and times of New York's legendary Chelsea Hotel. Hello, Cheryl. Welcome to Nightlife.
Hello. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So just describe Chelsea in New York for those people who might not be familiar with it. What kind of neighborhood is it within New York?
Chelsea is on West 23rd Street in New York, which at the time it was built in the 1800s was like the Times Square of New York, the theater district. It has the advantage of being within walking distance of almost everything interesting in the city. You can walk down to Greenwich Village or north to Central Park, and it's at a nexus of the subway lines. So you can get anywhere, and you can come from anywhere to get there. So it's the perfect location for a cultural nexus, which is what it was designed to be.
So who built the hotel, and what purpose was it built for? Because it's got a bit of an interesting history.
Yeah, it has utopian origins. This is what interested me about the hotel initially. We've all heard the stories, as you described in your introduction. It's, as far as I know, the largest and longest-lived artist community ever in the world. And so I wondered why and how it had been created and whether it was an accident of history or whether it was deliberate. And it turns out it was a deliberate creation by a Frenchman named Philippe Jean-Jean Hubert. He gave himself an English last name so Americans could pronounce it. He created it because it was the Gilded Age, 1880s. Housing was very expensive, and nobody bought American art at the time, so American artists couldn't afford to live in the city. So he made this cooperative apartment building so that artists could live also with working class people and with wealthy people all mixed together to try to create an American voice, an American sense of identity in New York City in the 1880s. So it had idealistic origins originally.
Yeah, and the design itself was so that people would live communally or at least spend a lot of time interacting with each other, wasn't it?
Yes, he had all kinds of utopian theories about how people could live together, free up their time, not have to be wage slaves, not have to earn very much money by living in a cooperative cheaply, and also that it could be an enriching, exciting experience to live communally. So he had the ground floor lobby with the fireplace and couches all around, a ladies' room where the women could go separately, a billiards room for the men. He had communal dining, a communal kitchen, and a wine cellar. He had he made beautiful gardens on the roof for poetry readings and musical concerts and looking at the stars, which you could still do then in the 1800s in New York. He built a pyramid on the roof as a clinic at the time, so that even if you got sick, you could just recuperate up on the roof in this health providing pyramid-shaped building where your neighbors could visit you and help take care of you. And the walls were, he made them 3 feet thick so that if you were a musician, you could practice your instruments without bothering the writers next door. and high ceilings with huge windows for the artists, for the painters, and there were wonderful artist studios also on the roof.
So he thought of everything, didn't he? Yeah. And did it work?
The palace.
In those early days, I mean, did all that come to fruition, that all these artists did come to live and work there?
Yes. Immediately they came to live there. First, the people who built the building got apartments there, and each person who had an apartment could decorate it his or her own way. And then, so they tended to be wealthier, so they had huge apartments on either end of each hall of the 10 floors of the building. And then toward the central stairwell, he would put small apartments for the artists that were, you know, cheaper, and then the artist studios, of course. He also added a theater and a drama school that was originally attached to the Chelsea. So you had the drama students in the small apartments usually with a parent. And Anthony Dvorak was there at the time writing the Symphony of the New World. So his music students and some of the teachers also lived in the Chelsea. And you had some of the first Hudson River School artists living at the top in the top floor studios. And they were all really working deliberately on trying to define what was America, because up until that moment, Americans had only been interested in European art. And now they wanted to sort of split off and think about who they were and what did it mean to be an American. Yeah, well. So they were making a lot of rural paintings of barns and fields and meadows, because that was mainly what America was at the
time.
Wow,
what a mecca. Group. Yeah, what a mecca if you're an artist to head to a place like this. Cheryl Tippins is my guest. She's the author of Inside the Dream Palace, The Life and Times of New York's Legendary Chelsea Hotel. So, Cheryl, how long did Hubert own the building for, and then what happened to it?
He didn't own it because it was a cooperative, so all of the tenants owned it together. But one by one, they went bankrupt over the ensuing depressions and recessions. Until the Great Depression, the entire building just went bankrupt and was abandoned. And it was bought by some Hungarian Jewish immigrants. One was a plumber, one was a carpenter, another, David Bard, worked in hotel hospitality, and they saved their pennies. And they bought it at a discount in the Depression. And it just so happened, they didn't know the history of the hotel. But coincidentally, David Bard, as the manager, had a reverence for art and artists and realized that he didn't have to spend a lot of money on renovating the hotel if he had famous visitors there, tenants there. So he invested in hospitality for artists rather than in the condition of the building. So during the Depression era, it became a bit of a flea bag, but it had all of the Greenwich Village artists who couldn't afford to live in Greenwich Village anymore during the Depression. It became a haven for penniless artists during that period.
Yeah, I understand. So one of them was the poet and writer Dylan Thomas, who was sort of had a few problems trying to find somewhere to stay.
Yes, David Bard would take in artists who had been kicked out of all the other hotels in New York. Dylan Thomas was one of these, and he was famous at the Chelsea for having knockdown, drag-out fights with his wife, Caitlin, throwing chairs and china, you know, jealous fits. But everyone loved him for that. That gave the hotel character. He was working on Under Milkwood there, and Brendan Behan was there, singing in the halls, drunk, the soldier's song in the stairwell, until he had a seizure and had to be taken back to Ireland. And Jack Kerouac and Gore Vidal were there for one night. Gore Vidal seduced Jack Kerouac. They had a one-night stand in the room, and then Kerouac didn't want to admit it, so Gore Vidal wrote an entire chapter about it in one of his books to out Kerouac.
There's been a lot written about for the trysts at the Chelsea Hotel.
Yes. So the seediness attracted more, of course it attracted the Beats, and it attracted more artists, and they, of course, through word of mouth, more and more people gathered. And it after World War II, it became an international nexus for artists. As more European artists started to come to America and the American art tradition started to really take flight.
Yeah.
So you had Jackson Pollock there. He was his mentor, Gertrude Whitney, took him to lunch at El Quijote, the restaurant attached to the Chelsea, to try to push his paintings to wealthy American investors. But he was so drunk he vomited on the carpet. And Whitney advised the manager to cut out that square of carpet and frame it because she said it would be worth thousands someday, which it would have been if he had done so.
Oh, that's too funny. So if we skip through to the 70s, Cheryl, Stanley Bard took over from his father, and he was, the same age as Bob Dylan and Andy Warhol, and he too got right into this idea of wanting all the celebrities and the poets and the artists to stay at the Chelsea.
Right. Stanley Bard was a rather shy, doe-eyed, sweet man, young boy, when he started working for his father at the Chelsea. He was sort of aimless, so his father brought him in where he could keep an eye on him. And he took over the Chelsea at about age 19 or 20. And it was like when your parents go away for the weekend and you have the house to yourself and you invite all your friends in for a party. That was the atmosphere then. He had Bob Dylan there. He had Christo and Jean-Claude. He had Leonard Cohen, Janis Joplin, Joni Mitchell, all the rock bands. No other hotels in New York would accept the rock bands as guests, rock and roll bands, the Grateful Dead, Edgar Winters, Mamas and the Papas, etc. of the time, because, of course, they brought in roadies, their entourage, and they were too much trouble. So he made a deal. Stanley Bard made a deal with his friends, his rock concert promoter friends, to bring them in at a discount to the Chelsea. So it was an entirely new atmosphere under him, and he loved it because he got invited to the parties and the art openings and the concerts, and he was the age of all the artists. So they loved him, he loved them, and the atmosphere at the Chelsea ramped up even more during that period.
So Cheryl, I've had some Australians stay there as well. I think the artist Brett and Wendy Whiteley lived there for a time.
Yes, they moved in in 1967, about the time that Leonard Cohen was there, having his one-night stand with Janis Joplin and so on. They got one of those wonderful artist studios with a garden on the roof. The garden was a real party place all the way through the Chelsea's history, but especially in the 60s and 70s. The Grateful Dead gave a concert up there, and people were doing video experiments and, underground films up there. And so he and his wife loved it there. It was they were very well liked. They very sociable. They had their beautiful little daughter, and they fit right in. And they felt very much at home, and they were perfectly suited for the Chelsea. And he did a lot of paintings there and paid the rent with his paintings. This was about the time that this tradition started. Stanley was quite willing to accept paintings from people like de Kooning and Pollock and Whiteley in exchange for rent. And he would then keep the paintings, and so he became very wealthy that way.
Yeah. Now, one of the more famous stories was the Sid Vicious from the Sex Pistols and the death of his girlfriend at the time. When he was charged with murder after this took place in one of the rooms at the Chelsea Hotel. What happened? There is some question, I think, these days about who was actually responsible for her death.
Yeah, because when she was stabbed to death, evidently. They had come there after he'd broken up, after the Sex Pistols had broken up, and he had just done his song My Way, and he was in the thrall of Nancy Spungen, who was a New York City club girl, and she was trying to manage his career. And they had a lot of cash from the release of My Way, so they were spending it all on drugs. So they were unconscious a lot of the time at the Chelsea, and this was the 70s, so it was the mean streets era of the city anyway. So Stanley had started renting a lot of single-room occupancy rooms to homeless people. The city would pay him to have homeless people living there. There were a lot of junkies shooting up in the bathrooms. So they fit right into this atmosphere. And Yeah, she was stabbed to death in the bathroom of their little suite. But he seems to have been passed out on the bed at the time. And the people at the Chelsea are convinced that it was her drug dealer who killed her because she was flashing around a lot of cash, and he killed her for the money. But the New York City police really wanted to stomp out this punk movement and drug use. And so they used evidently used Sid Vicious as an example, and they framed him, or they blamed him for the murder. And he probably would have been convicted had he not died of a drug overdose before the trial. So that mystery was never solved. There was no desire on the part of the police to actually solve the find out who the real murderer was.
Cheryl Tippins.
But that spelled a really down period for the Chelsea for the next half dozen years. The press really, really... It was just considered in the press a flea bag drug haven, and to a large degree it was. It had a lot of drug dealers living there and pimps in the hall and a lot of narcs also.
Yeah. A lot of suicides, I understood, Cheryl, during this time as well. I mean, D.D. Ramona had a story, you can tell us, he was sitting in Stanley's office one day.
Yeah, he was sitting in Stanley's office discussing things, just shooting the breeze, and Stanley interrupted him for a minute to call up to a tenant on the ninth floor and tell her rent was way overdue. She needed to pay right now. She needed to pay her rent, and she said, "All right, I'll be right down." And while they were sitting there in the office, which faces the sidewalk, they heard a bang on the sidewalk outside, and they looked outside, and the woman had jumped from her balcony.
Oh, my goodness.
Committed suicide. So that was the atmosphere of the Chelsea at the time. Beattie was there trying to get off of heroin, which he successfully did, and wrote a novel called The Chelsea Horror Hotel while he was there.
Cheryl Tippins is with me, author of Inside the Dream Palace. Some of them sound like nightmares, or the life and times of New York's legendary Chelsea Hotel. I'm worried we're not going to get to everything we need to cover, Cheryl, but I do want you to tell us about Stanley, because you went to meet Stanley in 2014 when you wanted to start doing this story, and he was finding life a little bit frustrating at the time, wasn't he?
Yes, I didn't really know very much about the Chelsea at the time, and I went to interview him for the first time, and he started giving me the usual spiel about its history, but then all of a sudden interrupted himself and started shouting that the board of directors of the hotel were trying to fire him and get rid of him and destroy the Chelsea, and his son was there who was supposed to take over after him, and his son ran up and tried to make him shut up because he was talking to someone who might write about it. But Stanley was really upset, and it turned out he was right. He was fired by the board of directors, who were tired of his. It was not so much. They were embarrassed by the seedy reputation of the Chelsea, the bohemian reputation. But also, they were very angry of the fact that he had kept those paintings by famous artists and not given them a share of them. He had kept them, and they hadn't gotten the money for the rooms either, because the paintings had paid for the rooms.
Oh.
So they fired him, and they sold the hotel for, I think it was $84 million. And since then, it's been shut down for renovations. That was a decade ago. And it has flipped three times. It now has new owners who are experienced at renovating old New York hotels, storied hotels in New York, and glamorizing them. But they bought it for $250 million, you know, on the third flip. So this hotel, it's the stories of the hotel that have made it so valuable.
Yeah.
But it's almost impossible to renovate with these 3-foot thick walls. It's hard to get a wireless internet going. They thought they were going to put a spa in the basement, but they had never seen that basement. And they realized when they saw it that there's no way anyone would go down there for a sauna. And so now they have decided they're putting a new communal restaurant. They're jazzing it up. They're putting several bars. They're reopening El Quixote restaurant, they say. They're going to put the spa on the roof along with the gardens and so on.
And is the pyramid still there?
And the pyramid is still there. Apparently that's going to be a little cocktail, bar. So, you know, they think they can make it work with its usual reputation. The question is whether they can have the entire mix of society that the Chelsea, that has always made the Chelsea churn. It's always made it work. It's always had working class people along with artists, along with wealthy stockbrokers and so on. And the working class people, the students, the tourists, how are they going to be able to afford these rooms that are going to be from $200 to $600 a night?
If you want to stay in the room where Leonard Cohen and Janis Joplin had their moment, right?
They've renovated the room so that, you know, you want to stay in the room where Patti Smith stayed. It no longer has the rusty sink, you know.
Oh, you need that.
It's going to be a $600 room, so it's not really the same.
Yeah. But Cheryl, we will have to leave it there. I'm so sorry. I wish we had more time to talk to you. But thank you for sharing what you have with us about the story of the Chelsea Hotel on Hotel Check-In with us tonight. Cheryl Tippins is the author of Inside the Dream Palace, The Life and Times of New York's Legendary Chelsea Hotel.